theme song coming back here on TechSags Radio, presented by David Gardner Jewelers. I'm here in the Rollo Insurance Studio, and it's time for Recruiting Country. We'll go out to the hotline in just one second, but Recruiting Country, presented by Caprock Health System, a fast patient-centered revolution in care with two ERs in the BCS, the original 24-hour emergency room in College Station on William D. Fitch, the full-service hospital with an ER in Bryan on Briarcrest, and online at caprockhealthsystem.com. We go to the hotline. TechSags recruiting analyst Ryan Broniger joining us. Bronny, good morning.
What's up? What's up, man? I appreciate you letting me stay in bed a little bit longer and not making me come in.
Oh, of course, yeah. How was
Man, after that flight got banged, I'm sure you had a rough day.
Dude, like, there was a lot of really unhappy people in that regional wing of the DFW airport, because it wasn't just like the College Station flight. They were canceling flights out of Dallas to all these little small regional airports in Texas. And so the customer service line was full of really unhappy people. But we finally got out of there about 10 after 11 last night. I got back to my house about 12:45, and by the time I unpacked and started the clothes and trying to get things ready for the week that I've got now in College Station, it was about 2:30 or 3 o'clock before I got in bed.
Goodness gracious. Well, hey, before we dive into the recruiting stuff, just kind of, I know we'll get into a little bit more of your baseball thoughts later on in the week and maybe a little bit more on Friday, but just, I guess, early takeaways from Aggies falling to Stanford in the Stanford Regional. What'd you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, Stanford was the better team, and I don't think anybody that was at Sunken Diamond all week would have argued that at all. When you watch them play, I watched every inning that Stanford played. It became pretty obvious to me about inning 3 or 4 of the second time A&M played them, I guess that would have been on Sunday, that this was going to be a really uphill task. I mean, that's just as complete of a team as A&M seen all season. They don't have any glaring issues. Their lineup is absolutely ridiculous. In terms of just raw talent, and then also the production off of that raw talent. And look, that's what Jim Schlossnagel was trying to build in College Station. And, it's going to take a couple of recruiting cycles to get it done. But, the Aggies were up against it. You know, even though they won that first one, they had an advantage. It was still going to take an incredible performance from A&M, like a complete team performance, and also probably have to ride a little bit of luck to beat Stanford twice. So, you go back and you look at it, you're disappointed, obviously. If you'd have told us at the beginning of the season that A&M would lose a regional final on the road, whenever we were talking about, a preseason top 10 team in January, you would have been a little bit disappointed. But if you look at what happened, if you'd have said the same thing in April, if I'd have told you guys in April that Texas A&M was going to lose a regional final at Stanford in a game 7, you're like, well, that seems like this team's going to put together some kind of rally. So really up and down season, and we're going to have a lot of roster turnover. So I think this will be – this offseason for me, Nick, will be more interesting than last offseason to kind of see how Jim Schlossnagel and Nolan Cain put together a new roster, because we know they're going to have so much turnover.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, let's jump into some recruiting. So – just kind of give us an update. How did the weekend visits go?
Well, I was trying to keep up with both the baseball and the football stuff, and Jason was all over what was going on with the official visits. But we have been able to talk to, 6, 7, 8 kids. We've been able to connect with some sources about how things went. And no commitments coming off the weekend, but we weren't really expecting anything. There wasn't a kid coming in that we were really eyeballing it and we're getting stuff prepped and ready for in terms of a commitment. But just like it's been for the majority of the 2024 cycle so far, we continue to hear that things were extremely well planned out. They moved efficiently. There wasn't a lot of hiccups in terms of the operation. And then one of the more surprising things to me was, they brought in a bunch of offensive linemen. And so Steve Adazio's time was really kind of stretched and pulled and had to be divvied up amongst a large group of priority targets for A&M, and it sounds like they did a really good job with that. All the offensive linemen that we've talked to have really had glowing things to say about their meetings with Coach Addazio. They talked to a lot of the current offensive linemen on the team who told them kind of about Coach Addazio's style and how he wanted to coach his guys. And it was all positive. We haven't heard one negative thing about that. I thought that that would be one of the bigger hurdles on the weekend because they were bringing in so many offensive linemen, and it sounds like they did a good job with all of them.
Yeah, and Billy was on yesterday, and he kind of mentioned a better vibe or better strategy, I guess, around the entire weekend. So I guess, would you agree with that? It sounds like you kind of touched on that already.
Yeah, I think, again, we've kind of seen it since the new year, or really since this recruiting cycle began in earnest, which would have been about February after the second signing day for the 23 class. Just, a better sense of what they want to do going into these visits, a much better plan, a much better just organizational structure. So, last year there was some instances of kids not having rides places. There's some instances of some kids not having proper name tags or being left by themselves for too long. So they've cleaned a bunch of that stuff up, and it seems like the whole organization and operations working a lot smoother now.
Talking to Ryan Broniger here on TechSags Radio, presented by David Garner's Jewelers. So, Bronny, I guess I'll just start throwing some names at you, and you just give us a little update. So I understand that Anthony Smith, is fresh off his visit to A&M.
Yeah, and that was an important one for A&M because, there was a lot of people in Southeast Texas talking about how much of a move that USC had made. Obviously, Texas is right there in it, but it seems like right now those are going to be his top three. He hasn't come out and officially said anything like that. You just talked to enough people, and then I talked to Anthony on the phone for a little bit while I was in California, and had a really good conversation with him. He really enjoys his spending time with DJ Durkin. Coach Durkin has put a very high priority on landing Anthony, and I think this official visit opened Anthony's eyes to that, just how bad A&M wanted him. And he got to really dive in with Coach Durkin about their plan for Anthony. If he chooses A&M, this is what he's going to do in the defense and how it fits. And I think it was a lot more some more X's and O's talk, perhaps, than they had previously sat down and discussed. So that was a much-needed official visit. He is going to come back during the season to see the Alabama game. And, seems like A&M is still right there in it. It's just going to be hard for them to land a bunch of guys without proving something on the field. They can nab a couple before the end of the summer. But in terms of their real top priority guys, I know Draylen Miller's got a decision coming up a little bit later this month, and we can talk about him too. But in terms of a lot of their top targets are still going to be at a little bit of a wait-and-see mode because, as we've said so many times, whether it be on the radio or on the message board, there's just a lot of people looking at A&M and going, okay, we really like what you're saying. We really like what you've got in terms of facilities and structure, and the Aggie network's a huge plus, but we need to see you do it on the field. And I think a good first month of the season could result in some dominoes falling A&M's way.
Yeah, talking to Ryan Broniger here on Recruiting Country, presented by Caprock Health System. And yeah, Bronny, you kind of just mentioned him, Draylen Miller. What's the latest with him?
So I spoke with Draylen and his father over the weekend, and there was a report that came out that said he was taking an official visit to Texas A&M on the 22nd. That report was incorrect. That's going to be an unofficial visit to Texas A&M that weekend. He is saving his official visit for the football season, and he has scheduled it for that Alabama weekend as well. So he is still planning on making a commitment later this month. We'll see, if that commitment is to A&M, then you'd obviously love to have him, or you love having him schedule an official during the season. If it's to somewhere else, then you still love him scheduling official visits to A&M during the season. And, every year we have this kind of discussion about top overall football players in the state of Texas. Remove the prospect label and start talking about just pure football players. And Draylen Miller might be that guy in this 2024 class. So A&M, again, another kid out of Southeast Texas that A&M really, really would love to land. And it seems like this one has kind of been A&M, LSU, and USC for a little bit. Miami is, you know, Draylen's just coming off an official visit to Miami, so they're trying to work their way into it. But it seems like to me that it'll come down to one of those four for the remainder of the month, and then A&M getting him in before one more time before he makes the decision, I think, is important.
I'll throw another name at you here. Bennett Warren, anything to update there?
Yeah, he's one of those offensive linemen, again, that came off of that official visit weekend, and a kid that I thought A&M had a lot of work to do on coming in. And it seemed like Oklahoma was out in front. Florida had been out in front. And I'll tell you this, A&M certainly has vaulted themselves back into the discussion after the weekend. I talked to Bennett Warren on the phone yesterday when I was actually in the airport waiting to leave San Francisco. And we had a conversation. I did an interview with him. And, you know, he's going to make a return trip to A&M. He hasn't had scheduled anything yet. But he was adamant that he really wanted to see a game at Kyle Field. And he wanted to be in that atmosphere and take in an entire game day in College Station. So that one went from, I thought A&M had a ton of work to do, to now, you know, A&M is squarely back in the mix for one of the premier offensive tackle prospects in the state.
Right on. Ryan Broniger there on the hotline. Bronny, are you good for one more segment?
Sure, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll go ahead and hit a break here. Bronny will come back a little bit more with Recruiting Country on the other side. This is TexSags Radio, presented by David Gardner Jewelers. Two straws, one shack, girl, I got by David Gardner like Jewelers. Maddie. We're here in the Rollo Insurance Studio, and we're talking to Bronny here on the hotline. It's Recruiting Country, presented by Caprock Health System. And Bronny, we do have a text on the
Hey, hold on, Nick. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Who is picking these intro songs?
I believe it's Emily. She's just started working our show recently, so okay. she knows that your favorite song is Applebee's on a date night. You went to go see that guy at the Houston Rodeo, right?
Well, that she hit me with that, and then Holla Back Girl to start the segment.
Yeah,
and I had half of mine. That old Dalton was back there smiling like a Cheshire cat, picking all these. They're like troll songs for me. Because they're some of my least favorite of all time.
Who knows it? I mean, he might have been sending covert messages to her. I'm not exactly sure, but they've been something. But hey, we're going to go to the text line. Luke Evangelist over in the News and Social Center has a couple of texts to read for you. Luke, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah. Hey, Bronny. Matt in San Antonio wants to know, which position group do you feel the best about that A&M has momentum for in recruiting? And then on the flip side, a position group that you think the Aggies need to build momentum towards?
Momentum with, I mentioned that offensive line group. I think they're doing a great job there. I think they got off to a great start with the official visit this weekend. There's more guys coming in throughout the remainder of the month. And I think that offensive line group, it might be like 10 or 12 guys deep that if they all wanted in, or if any of them, I should say, each of them would want in, that A&M would take him and be really happy about it. So I think for a position group that only has one commitment, I'd say that there's some good juice there on the offensive line. Then obviously defensive line as well, too, because of the two guys that you have coaching it and recruiting it. And so they haven't gotten off to a huge start on the defensive line either. They got Daylon Evans committed. He's a fantastic prospect. Florida is doing all they can to try to flip him off of his A&M commitment. But I do think that A&M is really starting to build some momentum with guys on the defensive line as well. And then on the flip side, where they need to get the ball rolling, I would say the skill positions, where I think running back and receiver are huge needs. I think they've got to kind of clear up the running back picture a little bit. You know, Kedron Young from Lufkin just committed to Notre Dame. They've got work to do with Taylor Tatum out of Longview. Derek McFall's out there. We thought maybe they'd be able to nab him before the summer, but, you know, he's still uncommitted. And so A&M has got to get the ball rolling a little bit at running back and also at linebacker. And we talked about that group of linebackers early on in the cycle, and there was a group of about four or five of them that, you know, you felt like A&M needed to get three, and they haven't gotten any. They did get Tristan Jernigan out of Mississippi, but he wasn't one of those guys we were talking about. That doesn't mean he's not going to be a fantastic player and he's not a fantastic prospect already. But there was a group of guys in state that A&M was really looking hard at. And you had, you know, now you've got Maurice Williams committed to LSU, Xavier Atkins committed to LSU, Peyton Pierce committed to Ohio State. And, you know, I think that they've done a good job with Anthony Smith, but they haven't separated themselves as the clear-cut leader. So that one's going to be a dogfight. So, you know, if you're looking for positions where they need a little bit of juice, maybe running back and linebacker.
Any more texts, Luke, for Bronny?
No more text messages.
No more texts. Okay. Well, Bronny, can we dive into camp starting? Anything you've heard from that?
Well, other than it's the second hottest couple of weeks of the year in terms of just weather, and then now there's no indoor over there for them to be doing. So it's going to be a little warm out there. I would hope that, you know, maybe they put up some shade areas for the parents to sit under and so that we can steal some of it too. But no, you know, the coaching staff always puts a premium on camp and kids coming to camp because they like working with some of their top prospects. They like seeing these kids in person. You know, they go out to their high schools and they watch them practice a little bit while they're on their high school campuses. But it's different whenever you're the coach that's getting to work directly one-on-one with these kids. You also get to see how they respond to adversity. And if you've never been out to one of those Jimbo camps, the first thing they do every day is they start with essentially like a conditioning, high-intensity station work kind of thing where it's agility, endurance, all this kind of stuff. And they just want to see how the kids respond to that kind of stuff. They obviously are looking at movement patterns and how explosive they are and how they change direction. But they also want to see how they'll work when they're tired. And that's something that Jimbo has always put a lot of stock in, as kids coming to camp and performing well and the coaching staff getting to see them one-on-one, not only just their raw skill set, but how they respond to coaching. And when you look up and down the A&M roster, you're going to see a lot of kids that at one point were on campus to work at a camp. And, you know, you go all the way back to when Jimbo started in College Station with guys like Lane Robinson, with guys like Anaya Smith. Those were camp offer guys that committed shortly thereafter because Jimbo just fell in love with them and how they worked and how they looked at camp. So there's a high likelihood that there's going to be somebody that's going to be the Lane Robinson or Anaya Smith in this year's camp weeks. And, you know, that starts today, this afternoon, and then they'll have two camps tomorrow, two sessions tomorrow, a morning and an afternoon, and then they'll have a morning one on Friday. So between those four sessions this week and the other four sessions next week, I would imagine A&M's going to find some players they really want.
Talking to Ryan Broniger here on TechSags Radio, presented by David Gardner's Jewelers. It is a recruiting country, and Bronny, I know a little bit about camps. I know it's a big recruiting tool, like you just said, for, you know, college coaching staffs all around the country. But I mean, from my understanding, it looks like you get a pretty wide, you know, age range of kids in there. But are there, you know, high school, like juniors and seniors at these camps? I mean, how exactly does that work? And I'm just asking for myself and maybe for someone out there who's, you know, not exactly sure how these camps go down.
Yeah, so they'll have kids that will be here for all four sessions, and then you'll have kids that come in for individual sessions. And they're all high school kids. I think you've got to be a rising ninth grader all the way to a rising senior. So the class of 2024 all the way down to the class of 2027 for this week at camp and next week at camp. They have the young kids camp. They get that done and out of the way first so they can get their kind of prospect camps rolling. So you'll see kids from all over the state, all over the country, throughout multiple classes. And, you know, hopefully we are able to get eyes on as many of them as possible and talk to all the ones that have A&M offers or in that legit A&M interest. And, you know, they always do a great job of pulling kids out of Houston and Dallas for these things. But, you know, it's always really interesting because they've had groups from the Pacific Northwest. You know, they had the international group come in that had Theo Orstrom in it a couple of years ago. That's one of the fun parts is seeing kind of how broad the reach is to get kids to come to camp.
Bronny, any names that we didn't touch on that you want to get into before we let you go?
I talked to Cohen Eccles as well, the offensive lineman at Katy. A&M doing a really good job with him. It was interesting to me that they talked to him specifically about playing center. Some guys, I think, are scared off by that. I don't know why they would be. I think, you know, center is a premium position that you have to be all in on. I've always, as me being the baseball guy, I've always likened playing center to playing catcher. Like, you're not going to have a really good center unless he really wants to play center. The same way with a catcher. Your catcher is not going to be really good if he doesn't really want to catch. So, and I think Cohen was very much open to that idea. He's a really smart kid. Obviously, coming from a high school power program like Katy, he will be very well versed in the ins and outs of scheme and angles, and his technique is going to be exceptionally advanced. So it didn't sound like it turned Cohen off at all to A&M. I do think he's more open than I perhaps thought he would have been coming into the weekend. Auburn's doing a good job. Actually, Texas Tech has done a great job with him. He's got some more visits he's going to take before he's ready to make a decision. You know, his dad's a former student in A&M, so the Aggies do have that family tie there. But I still think, even though he's more open, I still think that's a kid that if the Aggies really want to get, they put the pedal down, they'll end up landing him.
Awesome, Bronny. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and rest up, and we'll see you here in a couple days.
All right, man. See you.
Thank you. Ryan Broninger there on the hotline. That was Recruiting Country, presented by Caprock Health System. We're going to go ahead and hit a break here. On the other side of it, we're going to hear from Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball. We're going to kind of wrap up the Aggies baseball season, talk a little bit about the super regional matchups coming up here later this week, and get his thoughts on all of that. You're listening to TexAgs Radio, presented by David Garner's Jewelers. Welcome back in. TexAgs Radio, presented by David Garner's Jewelers, here on a Wednesday, and we are about to go out to the hotline. Richard Zane, a TexAgs baseball contributor here, helping me out. Not contributor, sorry, you're our baseball writer.
Oh, no, it's okay. Contributor works.
Okay.
Well, it's nicer than some of the things people call me.
Yeah, that's very true. We're going to go out to the hotline now, talk to Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball. Kendall, welcome into TexAgs.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Hey, go ahead and just wrap up the Aggie season for us. You know, they fall in Game 7 in that Stanford Regional. Gave it a good run, but what are your thoughts on the Aggie season overall as a whole?
Well, I mean, I'd probably give it like a C+, D-. I mean, I think when you look at A&M season overall, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a team that coming in the season that we all kind of expected to be a national championship contender. They weren't that. It wasn't all negative. I mean, I think if you look at the season in a nutshell, I mean, there's a lot to build from. I mean, I think if you look at the evolution of a guy like, you know, Jace Lavalette, you look at some of the strides, you know, some of the bullpen pieces made, you know, like Brandon Garcia and Evan Ashenbach. You know, there are some pluses with this team. But at the end of the day, the expectation here was Omaha. The expectation here was to compete for a national championship. They didn't do that. And, you know, I know Schlott's one of those people that, like, you know, he doesn't believe that, you know, if you don't get to Omaha, you had a bad season. But I think it kind of it recalibrates A&M's expectations a little bit, right? So, like, you get to the Final Four in your first year. I feel like, you know, A&M kind of set the bar a little high in year one. And now I think you kind of calibrate it to where it's like, hey, now let's focus on just, you know, finding a way to get to Omaha as opposed to, hey, we got to win a national championship. So, at the end of the day, bad season, no. Great season, no. Just kind of an in-between for me.
Kendall, obviously the Aggs fell in back-to-back games Sunday and Monday to a really good Stanford offense. Obviously, as somebody with a national view on all things college baseball, Just can you help put into perspective how potent that team that David Oesker has put together really is?
Yeah, no, man, that's a good question. You know, it's kind of funny. I was talking to Bronny and a couple other people today about Stanford, and I said, hey, I said, out of all the West Coast teams, they're the most SEC-like team I've seen. Like, you know, they may not have, you know, they'll have two or three really good arms. The rest of the bullpen will be just okay, kind of like the way the SEC was this year. But what they do have is they have a really potent offensive lineup, and they can strike fast. I think the biggest thing for me when I look at Stanford that I really was impressed with those guys is the fact they never got too high or too low. I mean, even whenever the A&M beat them, it was kind of just a, you know, I wouldn't call it cocky, but it was kind of like, okay, whatever, like we've been here before. And I think even in the final game, you know, I'm not saying A&M was tight, but like, you know, Stanford was clearly the more loose team. Like they look confident. They're kind of cracking up in the dugout a lot when they hand over the dugout. You know, Dave Asker during his ESPN interview was all smiles early in the game. And so that's just kind of the culture they have, the feeling they have. And when you combine that with a lineup with Alberto Rios and Tommy Troy, Malcolm Moore, just, you know, number one, they've got a really talented lineup. But number two, I mean, they've got a lot of really talented young players. So I just think they're just a very, very good offensive team. And I would be surprised if they aren't in Omaha next week.
Well, as a bunch of Aggies, we certainly hope they are in Omaha, considering who they're playing.
You're not going to root for the state of Texas? Come on, man.
Go Frogs? Negative. Maybe, I guess. Longhorns.
I don't know if you want to say that either.
Yeah, I've got some bad memories of 2015 and 2016, and then I guess 2017 as well.
Yeah.
Kendall, you mentioned Jace Lavalette a little bit earlier. Obviously had a really good night on Sunday and Monday as well. Really the only Aggie hitting in that game. But his season as a whole, man, how impressive was that freshman campaign from that kid? Obviously he came in with the very high expectations, but he really lived up to them in year one.
Yeah. No, I think the biggest thing for him is, you know, coming into the season, you know, I think he was a guy that, you know, we all expected to be a premier hitter. I mean, I think I picked him as my freshman of the year in college baseball, and he did not disappoint. You know, he had got up to a little bit of a slow start at times after the first couple of weeks that he hit those bombs, and he kind of went in a little bit of a slump. But then he kind of regrouped, and, you know, then in Hoover he kind of had a couple of rough games, and then all of a sudden he regrouped at Stanford. So, I mean, I tell you what, like, he is a five-tool player. You know, he's got power, he's athletic. I think he plays just fine in the outfield. And, you know, I mean, the sky's the limit for him. You know, he's just one of those guys that, you know, it's very seldom that you get, you know, that kind of kid where, like, literally every tool is checked in the checkbox on a scouting report, and he's that guy.
Yeah, and another guy this past season that was huge for Jim Schlossnagel and the Aggs, Hunter Haas, just what a season for him.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you what about Hunter. You know, he was one of those kids that, you know, he went out to the Cape. He was at Arizona State. And, you know, he was one of those guys that, like, kind of always looked the part. And he just never put it all together. He's one of those guys that put it all together this year. I thought, you know, I thought Hunter played an excellent shortstop. He was ultra consistent. He had really accurate arm. You know, you could say, like, hey, he might not be quite as twitchy as some other guys. But I'll tell you what, man, he made plays. He had a really accurate arm, and I think the biggest thing for me that was a surprise was his offensive approach. I mean, it was a very consistent offensive approach. He hit with some power, and I was ultra impressed. Again, you know, we talk about positives. He was a huge one. You know, his ability to take that next step. I mean, if he doesn't take that next step, you know, A&M is probably not in a – actually, I can pretty much tell you, A&M's not in a regional if he doesn't take that next step. So, obviously, it was huge for him.
I still don't know how he was left off any of the all-SEC teams. I mean, all-defensive team, certainly so. But Hunter Haas, great.
Yeah, he's one of those weird guys that, like, he's not ultra-flashy. Like, if you watch Hunter Haas, you're not going to go, whoa, like, wow, he's incredible. But what is important with him is if you watch, which scouts will look at, if you watch just a whole season, if you go into Synergy and watch all of his games, you're like, okay, this guy's pretty dang good. And so I think he's a kid that has a chance to get, you know, drafted in a rather decent round.
Yeah, and I don't really remember him making a ton of highlight defensive plays, but he made plenty of tough ones, and he made the easy ones. If you it felt throughout the season, throughout the SEC play, if you hit it to Hunter Haas, you were out. So And
yeah, no doubt. I mean, and yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah. No, I totally agree.
Yeah, and it had felt in recent years like A&M had been lacking that kind of defensive reliability at that position, a premium defensive position. So Hunter Haas was really a revelation, and obviously they don't really know what the future holds for him. Pro ball opportunities certainly await, and there's a lot of unknown surrounding this Texas A&M roster. It's going to be an interesting offseason, Kendall, so
yeah.
Way too early, and I know you've got your eyes on the sure. rest of the NCAA tournament and the postseason, but way too early. What do you think Texas A&M needs to do this offseason? Where do they really need to address some weaknesses, some areas of concern to get back into contention and be a legitimate title contender moving forward next year and the year after?
Well, I think it all kind of starts on the mound. And, you know, and what's really disappointing is I felt like that pitching staff as a whole started to find a little something like way too late. You know, they started to find a little something the last 2 weeks of the season. And I get they had the one stinker against Stanford. But, I mean, if you look at the end of the season, you know, Garcia, who by the way, will probably, with the way he threw down the stretch, will have a chance to get drafted. You know, when you look at Garcia, Johnston, and Ashenbach, the way Detmer threw in the final game, the last couple of weeks there were a lot of positives on the mound. But with that said, I think anytime you're going into a regional and you're Jim Schlossnagel and you aren't real sure how to set up your rotation, that's an issue. And I think as you go in the offseason, A&M has got to go out in the portal, whether it's in the portal or high school kids or whatever. They've got to find a good/stable weekend rotation. You can't go the whole season, flip-flopping starters all season long and then go, hey, we expect you to get to Omaha. Like, that's not an Omaha setup type of team. So I think that's the number one thing for me. And I think the other thing, you know, we mentioned Hunter Haas, you know, they kind of addressed, you know, his potential departure with the addition of Ali Camarillo from, CSUN, Cal State Northridge. You know, he's a guy that scouts are sky high on for next year on the West Coast. So they kind of addressed that issue. If he leaves, obviously they're going to lose, you know, guys like Bost. But, I think there's going to be plenty of young talent in this program. Caden Kemp was a guy that I felt like, you know, I saw him in the fall. I really liked him. I think he's got a chance to be, you know, really good as he gets more at-bats and, you know, more playing time. And then they'll get, you know, Prager back next year. I don't know exactly what the timeline on him is, but they will get him back next year. So I would say this. I think A&M's going to be very aggressive in the portal. From my understanding, A&M has a lot more at its disposal NIL-wise than they did a year ago. So I expect them to be ultra-aggressive in the portal. And I can tell you this from knowing Jim, you know, for as long as I have, is, you know, after getting the Final Four last year and not getting to a Super this year, there will not be a hungrier dude in College Station than Jim Schlossnagel. And so I guess for those on the transfer portal hunt, I'd say watch out.
Certainly a little bit of a bitter taste around these parts, but there's still a lot of college baseball to be played this season, Kendall. And unfortunately, the Aggies aren't a part of it, but plenty of interesting and exciting storylines, and beginning with none other than a 4 seed coming out of a regional in Oral Roberts. I know a lot of people were thinking maybe they shouldn't have been a 4 in Stillwater and should have been a 3 seed somewhere, but how impressive is the run that they've gone on, and what can we expect from them in Eugene this weekend?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Ryan Fulmar does a really good job, and if you remember, guys, back to the College Station Regional last year, the 7th or 8th inning that A&M finally pulled away from those guys? I think A&M won 6-1, and I think I want to say it was 2-1 in the 7th. So that kind of gave you an idea of just how good that team is. I tell you what, man, they're loaded. I mean, Jonah Cox is one of the best players in college baseball. They've got some nice pieces on the mound. Kate Benton on the back end of the bullpen was up to 97 last week at the wipeout slider at Oklahoma State. And so that has been a great storyline. I think when you look at, you know, ORU, you look at Indiana State going to TCU, that's where I'll be this weekend. How about the Sycamores and the job that Mitch Hannis has done this year? I love college baseball when the Blue Bloods are winning, but I also love these little storylines on the side, you know, like ORU and Indiana State. That's just a piece of college baseball that is so much different than, let's say, college football. College basketball, you'll see some of these runs sometimes in the tournament. But, ORU and Indiana State are for real. I watched both those teams extensively over the weekend. And they're both ultra-balanced. Don't be surprised if they won their Super Regionals.
And hats off to Indiana State for passing up that Super Regional bid and honoring their commitment to Special Olympics. That's a interesting really heartwarming storyline.
Yeah, I saw where TCU fans like put out some sort of GoFundMe for Special Olympics in Indiana. I think they've already raised like $35,000 or something for it. So just an all-around good story and what's kind of a cruddy situation with them having to go on the road.
I haven't seen that, Kendall. That is really cool. And I guess just one last question to wrap it up. What else should college baseball fans be watching for this weekend? What are you expecting? And I don't know if you want to name an Omaha 8 right now, but if you want to give us some super regionals to keep an eye on for really exciting college baseball this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think about Wake Forest. I mean, Wake Forest was an absolute machine last week. I think they scored 42 runs in three games in Winston-Salem Regional. Keep an eye on them against Alabama this weekend. Alabama's been sizzling hot. That's going to be really interesting. And I think South Carolina, Florida is really interesting to me as well. I mean, South Carolina swept Florida earlier this year. Now they have to go to Gainesville. So that's really intriguing to me as well. Then, you know, I mentioned Indiana State and TCU. Nobody other than, maybe Wake played better last weekend than TCU. I mean, for TCU to score, what was it, 30-something runs on Arkansas in two games, dude, that's hard to do in Fayetteville. So keep an eye on the Frogs. They're playing at an incredible level right now.
Well, that's Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball. Kendall, thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy the weekend of watching lots of college baseball.
You got it, guys. Zags will be back. We'll talk to you later.
Yes, sir. Have a good one.
Thanks, Kendall. I should have asked him which team he hates the most this weekend.
Yeah, it's probably a lot of them, I would imagine.
He's got some hatred for all six.
Definitely
teams,
all of them, for sure. But hey, thanks, Richard, for joining me for that. One more segment on the other side. You're listening to TexAgs Radio, presented by David Gardner's Jewelers.
The one desire.
To get rid of Richard Zane, but he's still in here. So we're gonna close out the show.
It sounds like
here.
You wanted it that way. You wanted me in here.
Yeah,
for this last.
I do actually. TexAgs Radio, presented by David Gardner Jewelers, here in the Rollo Insurance Studio. Nick Savage here filling in for David Nuno. You brought to my attention Madden has a new cover athlete.
Yeah.
So effectively, his career is pretty much over.
Really rough for Buffalo Bill fans and fans of Josh Allen. That's woof. The Madden curse is a real deal.
Yeah. Who is last year's?
Luke, do you know, I don't play Madden. So I'm not a big video game guy in general. I just play the show.
It was a tribute to John Madden. He was on all three covers.
Yeah, there is no curse there.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
rest in peace.
Either way, we'll see if it holds up this year with Josh Allen. You hate to see it, but well, apparently, speaking of video games, me and David kind of talked about it at the start of the show. On three, originally put out an article that players were thinking about, holding out, saying we're not going to use our names
for
the
new NCAA game coming up.
Yeah, because apparently the estimate was going to be about $500 per player on the game, and there's some, I guess you'd imagine, higher profile players who'd say, yeah, we're worth more than that. So there, it came out about an hour ago. Cade back there brought it to my attention that the NCAA, or pardon me, the like collegiate football player union was going to boycott the game or something like that now. Ooh. So now it's, yeah, exactly. Ooh, I mean, just as
I
long
didn't
as
know
they,
there was a union.
I didn't either, but as long as they put, I mean, the ability to change the players' names like you could in the last one that I played when I was in middle school.
That's the whole problem back in the, you could go in and download rosters, but that's the problem. That's why I went away.
Yeah.
But
so,
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see about that one. But
I'm excited about that one. I will play that one. Yeah. It might cause me to go buy a next generation console, but we'll see.
I don't know if I'm going to go in that deep, but
well, it's going to be better on the next gen console, right? It's not going to be great on the PS4.
You'd hope.
So we'll see.
Yeah, but I guess a couple minutes left here. Richard, any MLB thoughts you want to get into?
My thoughts are that the Los Angeles Dodgers bullpen is catastrophic and absolutely terrible, but nobody wants to listen to me talk about that. Astros do anything yesterday?
They lost is what they did.
I know the Rangers won again, that team. So I saw a stat that since like May 15th, the Houston Astros are tied for the best record in baseball, and they've gained absolutely zero ground in the American League West. That's insane. Did you see the Jacob deGrom video yesterday?
of him kind of getting emotional.
Tearing up at the press conference. That's rough news for Ranger fans. Really hard to watch because it shows how much a guy like that cares. Yeah. And Dalton and I went up there in April to see his second start as a Ranger. He's a fantastic talent. Obviously, he's hurt a lot, so a lot of Mets fans are out there saying, I told you so. But at the same time, if you're a Rangers fan and you're trying to find a positive note to look at the Jacob deGrom injury, I mean, that team is one of the best teams in baseball. They're leading the American League West. I still think they're ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. I think Houston will catch them and win that division. I think Texas will make the postseason as a wild card team. That's fine. But if anything, that injury probably takes off a lot of pressure on their front office to go make big moves at the deadline, which should help them in the long run because they've got some starting pitching coming up the pipeline and they're going to be good for the next few years to come. Really, really fun and exciting summer up in North Texas and something to get excited about in the near future. So
not counting 2020, the last time DeGrom made more than 15 starts was 2019, where he made 32. He made 15 in 2021, 11 last season, and only 6 this season.
And the science and the medical industry and the way they do Tommy John surgeries and stuff is so good. I imagine he's going to come back just as good, if not better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Richard, for helping me.
Great job today, filling in. That's an MVP move. Not too many people would have been able to do it, so you should feel really good about the job you did this morning. And
appreciate it.
Yeah, great job, Nick. Very proud of you.
Appreciate it.
Proud to call you a coworker and a good buddy.
Appreciate it.
I can't wait to room together in Nashville.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be roomies in Nashville. SEC Media Day is going to be awesome. Luke, thank you at the Social Center. Cade, thank you for taking over my spot, and Dalton filling in here and there as well. That's going to do it here for Texags Radio, presented by David Gardner Jewelers. On the other side, Louis Bellina. Thanks, y'all.